This is CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, it's Monday, rise and shine. I got out of the shower this morning and I was shivering like a scared dog.
Ooh. The word hypothermia came into my head.
Yeah, that's never a good sign. When the words hypothermia just randomly assert themselves in your consciousness, you know.
Shit. So I have tiles all over my place. And
the bathroom, obviously, but the rest as well.
And yeah, including my lounge and room. And this morning was the first time I couldn't walk around barefoot because I like to do so. But I just plonked my feet onto the floor from my bed when I woke up, and there was like, ooh.
You know, I got to tell you,
first
like,
wins.
I'm like, maybe I should put heating into my floor. This is actually something I thought about before I built the house. And I'm glad I didn't, because apparently the electricity bill's just unreal when you have underfloor heating.
Oh, really?
And you basically have to turn it on and leave it on all winter. If you do on and off, it's even more.
Right. So I was talking to people who just, these are people who don't have money problems, and they were saying, no, it's too expensive.
People who have money problems are saying it's expensive. That's when you know.
Yeah. So these people could easily afford to keep theirs on, but they say it's too expensive, so stay the hell away.
Yeah. Okay.
But then I remember last year what worked quite well is to put on a heater at sort of low speed, low power when you go to sleep at night in your bathroom, somewhere obviously far from the water.
Yeah, like
nobody
not,
else is,
not in the bath.
Yeah, no one else is going to be using my bathroom while I'm sleeping. So I put the heater at the opposite end of the room to where everything is, you know, the basins.
Stuff.
And yeah, correct. And then you just kind of leave that on, and you close the door of the bathroom critically to keep it, like, insulated.
A hot box.
Yes. And then when you get in the morning, you're like, ooh, toasty. And you can get dressed in there and everything. But I forgot. So this morning I woke up, and I felt like I was in the middle of the Arctic.
Those old school heaters where you pull the string and it clicks.
What?
They're usually positioned, like, above the door. With those exposed bars.
Those ones, yeah, that's the one to have.
Those are the ones
to
have. Those heat up immediately.
Good idea, yes. What an excellent plan. Yes. So I think I have to go shopping today.
Because winter, she's here. We're in June now.
And winter hates us. Winter, you know, summer may bring with it lots of discomfort and all that kind of thing, but summer doesn't hate you. Like, winter's got teeth. And winter looks at you and wants to exact revenge for some reason. Winter's a vengeful bitch.
Just to remind you how tough life can be.
Yeah, because we're all, you know, we have this conversation over and over again, but life is pretty damn decent in 2019. I know that, don't get me wrong, I understand you got problems. Some people have health problems. Some people have financial problems. We all have worries. We all have relationship issues. We all have career dissatisfaction. There's stuff that happens, you know, I get that. But mostly you're not living as badly as your ancestors did. I mean, they would have to dig a hole in the ground and like, set themselves on fire to keep warm.
Imagine sleeping in a cave.
At least one family member.
Yeah, they'd burn one of the smaller children.
Oh, just the muck and the smut of just
stickiness.
Listen, people used to live in dung huts, man. We're not talking that long ago. And now here we are complaining about our first world problems. But I'll tell you, winter hits everybody equally. I got into my car this morning. Now, I used to drive a smarter car than this.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to have seat warmers. I miss that too.
Ooh.
So I'm feeling a bit deprived. Even, I mean, like, I don't use the heater in my car because it tends to dry things out and make it very unpleasant.
Yeah.
So I'd rather just dress warmly when I drive. And it's only really in the morning, because during the day it thaws out. And
We're very lucky in Gauteng with our daytime winter.
But I don't like the heater in the car, because it tends to make you feel like congested almost.
Oh, I love it.
You like it, huh? You put it on.
You know that moment when you feel like, could my insides be burning at this point?
Oh, you like
that? That's that temperature I reach in the car.
Oh. Well, no, not for me.
This conversation is riveting because it makes me feel like I want to be back in bed.
No, I don't like aircon during the summer, and I don't like heaters during the winter. But in the car, I'll use the aircon. I won't use the heater. And this is probably the most boring thing you've ever heard on Monday morning at 6:30. There we go. And it is weird, like the things we have to do to warm ourselves up. Now, here at our offices, and I'm sure that where you work, there's also a similar situation. Some of the rooms are okay because they face north. And they get warmer. And they are pleasant to work in. So the studio and the main office where everybody works are on the northern side of this building. On the southern side of the building is my office, Greg's office, and there's one other office, which is now Sears.
Ooh.
And those are like freezers.
My word.
You have to turn on, talk about leaving the heater on, you have to leave it on the night before.
And you come in and it's you walked into your office this morning, that's the first thing you said. So cold.
No, it's hectic.
How was your weekend?
Yeah, tell me about yours first.
I had a very cool weekend. I had some family over from Durban. And so I was chaperoning them around town.
Take them to all the hot spots?
Yeah, I didn't just want to, you know, just be stuck indoors and, you know, call it a day.
But so where did you take them?
We went around town. We went to Constitutional Hill. And, you know, that's always nice and interesting to walk around because there's a concourse there.
That's
free and open to the public to walk around. There's also the women's jail that you can go around. There's the old fort there as well. So it's very, very cool. Sidebar, if you're looking for a foreign partner, also going to these tourist hotspots is the place to be.
There we go.
Because all of these major tourist groups are there.
Okay.
I saw two potential people over this weekend. I'm like, yeah, I could go back to Romania with you. Also did a bit of Soweto as well, which is always a great vibe, especially on a Saturday. And then went home, did some cooking for the family as well, and also got to squeeze in two very cool documentaries that I watched.
Oh, yes.
The first is, no surprise here, but it's one about Meghan and Harry and how...
Oh, you love that.
How they'll...
Oh, I can imagine you love
possibly
that.
Possibly raise their new baby.
Ooh, that's exciting.
But I found out little interesting things about, you know, how many changes we see with every new generation, but how when Queen Elizabeth was born, back then Princess Elizabeth, it wasn't a thing for the royals to announce a pregnancy and to be so proud of your pregnancy because I guess those were the times.
Yeah, but also
it wasn't really, they were very private and it was none of your business.
Yes.
The public.
But also it was the chances of you carrying full term were less than now.
That's true. That's true. It's always been, it's always been an issue.
Back then they would just say, oh, so-and-so has cancelled her public appearances and public work.
And they would assume maybe they were pregnant.
Yeah.
Meantime, they were barfing into a checkers packet. Morning sickness.
Just drunk.
And then when the introduction of paparazzi came about, they would say, please refrain from taking photos of so-and-so in her current state. I'm like...
Oh, my word.
To think about that. And also, they would have, you know, lead in certain positions have to be in the room when the royal and the family gave birth to actually prove and account for the fact that this is a royal coming straight from a royal as well. Imagine having like 8 odd men looking at you as you're giving birth, and that was just a thing.
They used to get all the royal families through most of medieval and Renaissance history used to give birth in public. Not in public, but in a room full of people who were witnesses.
Yeah.
You know, there were doctors, there were also members of the aristocracy hanging around, there were uncles and aunts and cousins, and she would have to give birth there and then.
But that was like her first night with her husband as well.
That was also in front of everybody.
Yeah.
They would all gather around the bed while the couple got into bed together, and then they'd leave them alone after a while.
Imagine.
I just look at them. I mean...
Yeah, okay, go about your business
okay,
now.
Okay, it's in. Let's go.
While we're here. And
is it in?
To think about...
Ooh, it's in.
How is that? Never mind. We're not going down that road. I'm not. And, you know, they also looked at Diana's impact and influence as well. And how really Lady Diana stood her ground and saying, I'm actually going to be a mother and mother my children.
Yeah.
Because it was almost unheard of for a royal to take her kids on royal trips or across the world.
It was totally really, unnecessary.
Yeah, kids just stayed with the nanny and that was it. But Lady Diana actually became rather envious of the nannies. Of
because they were spending more time with their kids.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then now came to what William and Kate do and probably what Harry and Meghan will do. And I even actually discovered a college in the UK. It's quite a nice upmarket college called Norland College.
Yeah.
This is the nanny school.
This was all in your documentary?
All in this documentary. Jeez, I loved it.
Must have been hours long.
I actually went back and I was Googling this Norland College and what they do. So it's this very prestigious nanny school.
It's not run by Oprah.
No.
It's a nanny school. What does that mean?
For like 5-star and elite families across the world.
All right. So you book your nanny there.
Yeah, they do the basics like childcare and, you know, educating children. But then because you're working with 5-star and elite families, they also teach you how to do taekwondo. They teach you how to drive away from criminals. They teach you how to punch an intruder while you're carrying the pram or pushing the pram. I'm like, this is fascinating.
When I was a baby, Precious didn't know how to do any of that.
My nanny didn't even know how to help me when I was choking. So that was the one documentary. And then I also found myself watching The Last Watch. That's the documentary made around the last season of Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah?
And actually even...
Why would you watch that?
I wanted to see...
You didn't even like the show.
Yeah.
I've never even watched the show. You know this. But I wanted to see how all of this came to be. And they start off the documentary by actually saying Game of Thrones is officially the biggest show, biggest television show ever, given the number of people who watched it and given the number of countries it aired in. But it was absolutely fascinating to see how big the show really is and how much effort goes into it. I mean, there's someone who is the head of snow department.
Yeah, and they just take care of artificial snow.
Someone who wakes up every single day and has to churn out this paper mache consistency and blow out snow. I don't know what... Is King's Landing a place?
Yeah, it's a place.
Or was it
I can't believe you watched a documentary about a show you don't like.
For me, it was about the...
You must have been bored as hell.
No, I really was actually intrigued. Because it wasn't about the plotline. It wasn't about Jon Snow, what he says or who dies. But it was about the production value that went into this thing. So to think about the fact that King's Landing took 7 months to build, but they only shot there for like 3 or 4 days... And then it had to be burnt up because that was also part of the show. And it was interesting to hear from the team who were saying things like, shucks, 7 months of work and it's gone like this because everything had to be, you know, on fire and exploded. There were things like they spent 55 nights working through the night because they were shooting the night shoots then. They shot in Iceland, they shot in Spain, they shot in Ireland. Mm. And it was interesting to also see some of the more surface level behind the scenes things because they didn't want to ruin the plot. And fans also could have easily figured out, oh, why are they shooting in Spain? But Jon Snow isn't here. So they had to fly all of the actors all over the world together.
To cover up.
Because,
imagine those extra expenses for nothing.
I think it is so amazing. The sets are massive. They follow this one lady who works in the prosthetics department. They follow her. She's trying to navigate the set. She even gets lost. She needs to go to a certain stage on set to film a scene, and she has to ask for directions. That's how massive the sets are. And I know sometimes we give actors some flack, going, oh, what do you exactly do?
But
to really follow these actors who are shooting at night, and then they have to kiss each other, and then it's like, no, stop, wait. And then 100 people have to give their take now. Like, no, kiss again, and then kiss and look at this camera.
So hard. What a tough life.
I really just thought
especially other good-looking people.
Yeah.
What a shit life. Most of us spend all of our recreational time trying to kiss other people who are attractive.
Well, yeah, whether you're Game of Thrones fan or not, and just want to see how this massive show is put together, I'd really recommend it.
All right.
Yeah, The Last Watch. So that's what I did this weekend.
Sounds very, very good. And how was your little holiday to the what is it, Mpumalanga area.
The view of Hazy.
She survived.
It was lovely.
Was it nice?
Oh, yes. There was nothing unexpected, which was great. It was just...
Yeah, like someone being eaten by a lion. That would have been not so great.
No, jeez. Not really. It was just relaxing and and lovely. And then this weekend, on Saturday, I co-hosted something called the Empowered Entrepreneur.
Oh, yes.
For women in business who have their own businesses. And it was the first one we've done. It was just so much fun and just... quite spiritual, which I'm not usually into.
Oh, hallelujah.
But it was about digging deep, you know. I haven't done that in a while. It's good to do that every now and then.
Sure.
Dig deep, reassess your goals, reassess your values.
Absolutely.
So that was pretty cool.
Very nice. I was in Cape Town on Thursday, Friday, and most of Saturday, and it was terrific. Weather was good. Got lots of meetings under the belt on Thursday and Friday morning, and then went through to Franschhoek on Friday afternoon and spent the time on Friday evening and Saturday with friends of mine there.
Mm.
And that was really, it's just such a beautiful place. My
love it.
God. You know? And there's, what I like about that place is everything, I mean, look, it's people who live there have lots and lots of money, right? Especially the ones who own the wine farms. Just tons of money.
Yeah.
But everything is so well looked after, so tidy, so organized, so neat. Mm. And obviously part of that is what money can do. Mm. But the people who live in the town itself are also really proud people. They're like proud of their little town.
Yeah.
And it's little.
Yeah.
There's the second oldest school in South Africa there. Did you know that?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Is what's also admirable is the preservation of what can be preserved.
Yeah, look, the school is in a bit of a bad state, but there are efforts underway at the moment to take care of that. But I'm just amazed at how everybody in the town does their little bit to help keep the place cool. I mean, that's obviously a place that a lot of people want to live. A lot of older people, I suppose, go and retire there and that kind of thing. But it's just pretty from beginning to end. And everybody who's there, and obviously there are a lot of people who've really made it in life, who've done extremely well, that go and live there in their latter years. And therefore you've got these tremendously energetic, successful people, you know, these alpha types who are there, and they push things forward.
Mm.
They make things happen. But it's a clean town. It's charming. Everybody has something to do. There's a little market on a Saturday. There are beautiful restaurants. There's just a quality of life which you wouldn't expect in Africa, let alone South Africa, but you'd expect only in the European countryside.
Mm, it is very European.
And for that reason, I mean, it's a jewel. It's a real jewel in our crown. And I'm very happy that I got to spend it a little bit more time than I usually do in a place like that. The only time I was there before was for that literary festival when we were talking about my book. And so I didn't really get to know the place very well.
Did you eat anywhere fancy?
No, on the Friday night we had dinner at these friends of mine, and that was terrific. I didn't need a restaurant after that. But the next morning we went to this place called the Big Dog Cafe. Basically, the owner's a Great Dane.
Okay.
There's a Great Dane who's in charge of the place, and he's the logo, and he runs around and kind of jumps on tables, and you know how Great Danes are. They don't realize how big they are.
No.
That's so cute.
And his name is Jack.
Mm-hmm.
And we were sitting outside having breakfast at, you know, Jack, the big dog's place. So that was nice. But otherwise, yeah, nothing too fancy. Had some beautiful wine, which you do in Cape Town and you do in Franschhoek especially. And otherwise, just lovely. Everything was just beautiful. It's the most magnificent place. And I can see why tourists to South Africa love going there. It's apparently the second or third most popular tourist destination inside of South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly for Europeans and those kinds of people. So, well done to the people of Franschhoek. Just a magic place that you've created there.
Mm.
Very, very impressive. Mm. You want to get into some news?
Yes, let's.
All right. So, there are a few stories we need to be paying attention to this morning. The first one of these comes from Mamelodi, which is in Pretoria, Tswane. And just the most horrible story. I saw this on social media, and I'm always skeptical of stories in social media. I think a lot of people make them up. But four staff members at a Mamelodi hospital have been implicated in the mistreatment of an elderly patient. And I saw the video of this 76-year-old woman who's tied to a bench. You know those benches like they have in the airport where a whole lot of chairs, you know, in a row?
Mm.
She was tied to this thing. She's lying underneath it. She's lying on the ground, and this video has been going around. It sparked outrage, prompted an investigation. Gauteng Health MEC Bandile Masuko and officials from the Human Rights Commission visited Martha Marais on Sunday to give her an update on the probe. The health department said two doctors, a nurse, and a security guard had been placed on special leave for shackling her to a bench at the hospital. So this is an old lady. I think she's probably got some mental health issue. But they chained her to this bench. I don't know how long she was there for. But it's just unbelievable the way... You know, this health department in Gauteng have got a lot to prove. These are the same people who created that whole Life Estimeni tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
The same people who run our hospitals into the ground. We have a number of really good nurses and doctors in this country, but my God, we have some wicked and evil people too who are only doing it for the money because they wouldn't be able to do anything else. And that makes me very, very cross. It would probably make you cross too. Masuku said an investigation was underway to establish why this woman was tied up. The reports have revealed four individuals who are involved and who are in this instance on special leave pending their suspension. Why do we have to wait for this? If we know that these are the four people responsible, why must they be put on suspension and carry on being paid? If you've behaved like this, they should take everything away from you.
And
everything.
Also, this is not the first time they've behaved like this. And this is not the first time that someone's been chained to chairs. It's been going on. It's just that this time it's been exposed.
Well, I hope so. We'll see. There's going to be a preliminary report soon. So there's the story, the first story in the news this morning, which is just very upsetting. The next one that you need to know about today, Zimbabwe was hit by a 3.9 magnitude earthquake. So a small earthquake rattled Zimbabwe's lakeside town of Kariba, the site of the great Kariba Dam Wall. We don't need earthquakes there.
No. Oh.
The Bulawayo's Seismology Center said it registered 3.9 on the Richter scale and there were no reports of damage on Saturday afternoon. Residents said it caused the shaking of buildings and the rattling of household utensils, but only lasted 30 seconds. Still, even a little crack in a dam wall is not a good thing. So we're absolutely...
Not that dam wall.
Okay. Leanne.
Boeing announced Sunday that some of its medium-haul 737s, including the 737 MAX 8, could have a defective wing part, but there had been no reports of flight issues linked to the defect. The American aviation giant, which has been rocked by an unprecedented crisis after the 737 MAX 8 fleet was grounded in mid-March, said a subcontractor informed it of problems with a batch of a part involved in deploying the wing's leading edge. The leading edge of an aircraft is key to takeoff and landing because it's meant to improve the wing's drag and therefore the jet's aerodynamics. Boeing said in a statement it had relayed the defective lot number to aircraft owners so they can inspect the parts in question. So everybody's suspicious now because of obviously what happened with that Ethiopian Airlines plane not so long ago. In other news, and the fourth thing you need to know today, the city of Cape Town are looking to ease Metro Police recruitment processes. They're looking to make it easier for people to apply, even if you don't have a matric, for example. They said anyone who's applied for a post must have been a registered traffic officer before. That requirement, the municipality said, was slowing down efforts to bolster the Metro Police's ranks. The city petitioned the National Police Commissioner, who had apparently agreed to waive that requirement. But the Western Cape Transport MEC would have to be consulted to take the matter forward. So there's some interesting news and some interesting developments. It will be easier, hopefully, for people to get jobs at the Cape Town Metro Police.
As long as they're qualified.
Well, yeah. And I mean, as long as they're trained in this case properly. And then there's this very bizarre story about Sandra Moonsami, who's a member of the Nika family that operates a multi-million rand logistics company called Crossmoor Transport. Apparently, she has been found alive. People who know her are praying for her safe return, and so too are people who don't know her. She went missing. She was kidnapped by professionals on Thursday evening in Pinetown while driving to her Westville home. A short while after her abduction, investigators were reportedly able to ping her whereabouts via cell phone tracking techniques. See, they can find you now, you idiots. If you think of kidnapping someone. It emerged Moonsami, who's 45, was abducted after the black SUV she was driving in was blocked by three vehicles near the M13 and Stapleton Road. Imagine how scary that is. You're a woman traveling on your own. She attempted to lock herself in her vehicle, but her assailants fired two shots through one of the side windows before she was dragged out and forced into a car. Her vehicle was found abandoned, with a cell phone and some of her possessions. The Directorate for Priority Crime Investigations is leading this investigation. So spokesperson Captain Simpiwe Mhlongo, at the time of publication, said, "We can confirm the Hawks members, together with other police units, are investigating a case of kidnapping and attempted murder. No arrests so far. The motive for the kidnapping is unknown." They found no traces of blood in the vehicle to suggest that the bullets had hit her. A source close to the investigation believed she was alive. If the abductors wanted her dead, they would have shot her at the crime scene. We established that two bullets were fired through the vehicle's window and entered the vehicle's dashboard when she tried to lock the vehicle. She had a second phone on her, and they were able to ping it in South Beach, but it seems like the phone has since been switched off.
That is scary.
Yeah. Isn't that terrifying? So, obviously, some people looking for some ransom money.
Yeah, I mean, they say the motive's not clear, but it's as clear as daylight.
Yeah.
Especially because they didn't kill her.
Yeah, that seems very suspicious. All right, we're going to get to Ben, who is on the line. He's not here. He's actually in KZN at the moment. He was at the event that Anthea was at yesterday, which is why Henry's standing in for Anthea today. Ben is going to give us a little bit of sport out of Durban, KZN. Ben, it's obviously much nicer and warmer down there than it is here in Joburg, right? Is he on Skype? Okay, see us again. Ah, there. Hello, Ben. All right. Ben. Ben, good morning.
You have reached the...
Oh, for God's sake. All right, well, there we go. There's the sport with Ben. You want to try again, or are we going to leave it? Try one more time, all right.
So I saw tweets of Anthea's successes and her race.
Jeez, Anthea was pushing everybody else out of the way. In fact, Ben sent me pictures of her.
Five.
No, there's no Ben there. Sorry, not going to happen. Ben sent pictures of her, and Anthea was basically elbowing everyone else out of the way. She was. She was pushing people around.
She's amazing.
She is amazing. Well done to her. She did the, what is it, a half Ironman?
Yes.
They call it.
So to be clear, Ben didn't do that.
No. He went to film some stuff.
Yeah.
No. Ben thinks that stuff's probably quite unhealthy. So, speaking of Anthea, we're going to get Henry Biddlecombe in here in a minute. He is going to talk to us about some of the things that are going on in the in commerce and the economy at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll find out about some of the IPOs. We'll find out about a term called operating leverage. And here he is, standing in for Anthea this morning. Henry Biddlecombe, how are you, Henry? Nice to see you again. Yeah, good, man. Very, very good. What's happening?
It feels like when it gets colder, 5:30 in the morning is...
It's horrible, huh?
It's an increasingly difficult time to get up. I don't know how you guys do it.
Trust me, actually. It never gets better, and they say it's always coldest before the dawn.
But how do you sound intelligent so early in the morning?
Do I sound intelligent? That's debatable.
Does I sound intelligent ever?
No, I don't even sound intelligent when it's balmy. All right, so a few things we wanted to talk to you about this morning.
Mm.
You introduced this term... and said, we need to know what operating leverage is.
Yeah.
What the hell is operating leverage? Let's learn.
It sounds like a really boring accounting term, doesn't it?
But what
it kind of is, except at a time like this. So normally, when you're investing in the market, you would think that you'd be looking for high-quality defensive companies which can kind of see themselves through difficult times, wouldn't you? But we now find ourselves in a fairly interesting position in the South African market. So at some point in time, the cycle has to turn.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about when a cycle troughs is that it's not the quality names that do the best. It's actually the low quality names that do the best. And that's because they've been beaten up the most. And what operating leverage refers to is that trend where your revenue line isn't growing.
Yeah.
Your expenses are. And your margins are getting compressed. So a lot of your listeners who are business
owners... So in other words, it sounds like an awful situation to be in.
An awful situation to be in, exactly right. And your profits get squeezed by more and more every year. And of course, there are a number of South African businesses which are in that position right now.
Sure.
And an example that I like to use is actually Massmart. And that's the parent company of brands that we all know. It's Game.
Mm-hmm.
It's Macro. It's Builders Warehouse. So, I mean, if I were to ask you guys, with 440 stores across 13 countries on the African continent, how much money do they make on an annual basis? If you were to thumb suck it, net profit, per annum.
I don't know, 200-odd million.
Okay, so that's a pretty good guess, actually.
Really?
So, yeah. Actually, it's almost spot on. So I think this year they'll make about 350. But that's an incredibly low number, considering that 2 or 3 years ago they made around 1.5 billion rand.
Oh, right? Wow.
All right, so they've suffered from negative operating leverage. But the interesting thing is now, if South African consumers just start to spend even a little bit more, they start to make a lot more profit.
Basically, what you're saying is almost like if someone has a terrible reputation and then someone says, wow, but I've met them and they're not such a bad guy.
And they don't murder you.
It goes a long way.
Exactly.
Right, okay.
Exactly right.
So it's trying to make the most of a really terrible situation, Henry. This is interesting. There's even an accounting term for reputation management when you've got no reputation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, another great example, and it's one that everyone will be familiar with, is Toghosan Holdings. So they're the guys who own Monte Casino, right. Silver Star, Gold Reef City.
And they've just appointed new CEO as well, haven't they?
They have. But we did a little bit of an analysis the other day. Now, if people just spend 10% more in the casino, which of this base isn't a hell of a lot more, is it? It's another 10 rand on your 100. Their profits will go up 40%.
And which will look great.
Will look great, and I think the share will go up by as much.
You're not encouraging gambling, by the way. You're just saying if that had to happen.
Well, if you are going to gamble, buy some Toghosan shares. Please get some of your money.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
In other words, also, when things are bad, any good news makes you feel better.
Precisely.
So what is the current state? Because we often talk about retail companies with Anthea. I mean, from your point of view, and you analyze a lot of these companies in your daily goings on, and you decide where to put money and where to take money away. What's your prognosis on things?
So it's pretty dire out there. And up until now, we've kind of favored the more defensive companies. So a company like Dis-Chem or Clicks, for example, which sell the stuff that we're all going to buy, whether we're making more or less money, right? And it's really the guys who sell the stuff that we can afford to defer that have been doing badly. And it's typically your fashion retailers like your Fashini Group or your Truworths. And they've really been battling to grow their revenue line. But like I said before, there will come a time when it makes sense to shift back into those names, because ultimately those are the guys that will capture more of the upside if people start to spend more money.
Correct.
Yeah.
All right. And then, you know, any real alarm bells ringing for you? Are there any companies that are in such severe trouble that they may not be around in a year or two's time, according to, you know, balance sheets and general word on the street?
There've been a couple of them on the JSE lately, haven't there? I mean, there's been EOH, and
we're hearing horrible things.
Horrible things. So they seem to be managing their way through it. Another one the other day that came through was Omnia. They told the market 2 months ago that they wouldn't need to raise more money from the market. Now, all of a sudden, they need to raise 2 billion rand. This against the market cap of 3 billion rand. So it's very dilutive to current shareholders. And then the other one, of course, is the sugar producer, Tongaat. It seems like there's been some malfeasance there on the financial side. So we're not quite sure what the impact will be. We're only going to find out towards the latter half of the year. And that share's come down from 180 rand to 18 rand. So the JSE has been a pretty scary place to be over the last couple of years, actually.
I heard the other day that Jamie Oliver's restaurants have gone bang as well. Not Jamie Oliver. He's still got some money, but his restaurant chain is folded.
That's right. So they've been trading in a very difficult environment in the UK. I don't know if you guys have been watching the Famous Brands share price, but they also bought a burger restaurant chain there called Gourmet Burger Kitchen. It was amazing, actually. The year they bought it, they made £6.5 million in operating profit. The year after that, it lost £1.5 million. It's now losing £4.5 million.
Is that as a result of market forces or mismanagement?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both, probably. But market conditions there are just awful.
Sure.
People aren't spending. There's been a flurry of restaurant openings, and of course, when the traffic goes down, that's bad for profits.
We're seeing a lot of IPOs, new listings of tech companies in the US at the moment. I don't know whether to get excited about these things anymore, because everyone's looking for the next big unicorn. But frankly, there isn't that much new going on in the markets, and the big guys are so established that whenever they see anything happening, long before it can list, they buy it up.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's obviously a space that we get asked a lot of questions about by our clients, and that's actually why I wanted to bring it up this morning. And the point I'd want to make to the listeners is that sometimes you have to separate an exciting story from the investment case, because often a good story doesn't necessarily equate to a good investment.
Yeah, because people hear a good idea and they go, oh, I've got to put money into that idea, but actually you haven't done any due diligence on the numbers yet. Maybe there's just no chance that money can be can be made out of a business like that.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, in the earlier stages of a business, sometimes you kind of have to take a view. I mean,
sure.
Ultimately, you have to take a risk to make money.
Sure.
And a good example lately has been Beyond Meat. I don't know how
familiar. What is Beyond Meat? Are these the guys who make artificial meat?
Those are the guys.
In a lab, they 3D print meat and so on?
That's right. So they've got some celebrity investors behind them, and one of which includes Bill Gates.
Okay.
So people recognize the importance of replacing your traditional meat supply chain with something else.
Yeah, I like that.
Obviously, it's driven by health concerns, but also mostly environmental concerns. You know, cows ultimately are bad for the environment.
Well, they fart. Really.
They fart a lot, right? It's an awkward conversation, really.
Yeah, all the environmentalists just kind of shimmy past that one, and they say, oh, well, you know, it's more about you driving your cars and you're using plastic straws and that kind of. It's really not. It's about cows.
It's about the cows.
Yeah.
So these guys have come up with a way to make a burger patty from pea protein, for example.
Mm-hmm.
That's not human pea.
No.
It's pea as in P-E-A.
The vegetable. Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And that science has actually been around for a long time.
Yes.
It's used in creating hypoallergenic food for pets. It's using pea protein.
That's right. The trick has been making it somewhat edible, which it is, and people actually say that it's quite good.
All right.
The problem is the valuation of this thing's run right away from reality. So it listed at $25. It's now trading at $105. That puts it at around 70 times sales, not profits, sales, which is an extremely high number.
It's dangerous. They can't sustain that.
It's dangerous territory. So I'd stay away from it just on that basis. But also there's a guy in the States who's come out with a story where he's analyzed the sort of health benefits of this patty. And it has a high amount of canola oil, which I'm told is very bad for you. It also has weird things like wood fiber in it to make the texture more sort of realistic.
Mm. Eating wood fiber is never really a good idea.
Doesn't sound like a good
idea. Never chewed on a piece of wood and thought, I need more of that.
No.
Sure.
No. So long story short, it turns out that actually maybe, although this might be good for the environment, might not be so good for you.
Yeah. And God's better really at making meat than we are.
He is.
Okay.
We're trying. We're getting closer, but some of the stuff sounds very ugly.
Mm-hmm. It does. But the point to make from an investor's perspective is that the share is really pricing in more than perfection.
Okay.
And you've got a very early stage story, which could change, you know, depending on new information that
and
comes
with
through.
All of this money that they've been given since they've listed, obviously people are going to use that for research. They're going to find ways to improve the recipe. And maybe we will end up with this very good artificial meat soon.
Yeah, and maybe someone else will bring it to the market, right? It might not be them.
Yeah, they might develop all the technology, they might do all the hard yards, and then someone steals it out from under them and starts making it.
That's exactly right. So that's a share that I'd be wary of, and it is one that people are asking a lot about at the moment. But generally speaking, you spoke about it earlier, it's always exciting to invest in the next hot IPO, and there seems to be a flurry of them coming out of the tech space at the moment. But you need to be careful about how you think about these things. And at the end of the day, you need to make sure that the story is grounded in good economics.
Okay, very, very good. Anything else on your agenda today? What are you going to be busy with?
So right now, Gareth, we're waiting for green shoots to appear. We're waiting for consumers to start spending money. I want to hear companies like Truworths and Mr. Price telling us that people are coming back into the stores, that they're taking out more credit, they're spending more money on clothes.
Are people even in the shopping malls? Because there are some of them that are doing better than okay. I mean, you see some shops are always busy. There are others that are like a ghost town. I went into Mall of Africa a while ago because I had a meeting there.
Yep.
And look, it was in the middle of the week and it was in the middle of the day, and I doubt very much that that's everybody's favorite time to go to a huge shopping mall that isn't really close to anything. But it was very, very quiet.
Well, you know, when you look at listed property companies, you look at the yield, which is kind of like the P-E ratio, but it's the inverse. So the higher the yield, the cheaper it is.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a bit of a strange concept to get used to, but the point to make is, over time, South African retail shopping centers have traded at yields of between 5 and 6%. Okay, they're now sitting at 10. What that means is that people are almost paying half the price for those property stocks that they were just a couple of years ago.
So if you're renting a shop space, it's going to cost you much less now than it
much did. Less now, and in fact, in a lot of cases, retailers are paying less on an annual basis than they were Rental charges are actually going down.
But don't be mistaken and think that's a good thing.
Well, it's not a good thing for the property owners. I suppose it's a good thing for the retailer.
Yeah, but even so, maybe it's because there aren't feet moving through it.
But exactly right. It's a function of revenue as well. So it's ugly out there, and your perception is probably spot on.
All right. Well, it's always good to catch up with you. Thank you, Henry.
All right, guys.
Good stuff. Henry Biddlecombe and the money shot this morning. Anthea will be back. Did you hear from Anthea? Did you see any of those pictures of her running her backside off?
I did. Oh. I did. It's, you always see the before and after photo. Yes. And the after photo always looks a lot worse than the before photo.
Because they've exhausted themselves, these runners and swimmers. And
I don't know how they do it.
No.
But she's back tomorrow.
All right. Well, we'll definitely catch up with her next week. But thank you, Henry. Always good to see you. There we are. There's a look at what's going on in the markets, what stuff to pay attention to, what stuff you need to be aware of, especially if you're an investor or you're just curious about how it all works. And speaking of investment and being curious about how things work, it's also Monday, which means Beyond Bitcoin. We're going to check in with Revix. You know, we started talking to them 2 weeks ago. We spoke about their exciting new offering, which is, you know, to go in and buy a basically an index of cryptocurrencies, an index, a balanced index, which brings into sharp focus which cryptocurrencies are doing well, which ones are doing poorly, which ones you need to be a part of. And they're quite a new business, but they really seem to be doing extremely interesting things. And we often feel like we need to check in on these things, no matter how little or much we understand about them. And today we're going to be talking to Sean Saunders, the founder of Revix, about payment cryptos and their payment bundle. So he's on the line to talk to us this morning. Sean, good morning. Nice to speak to you again. I'm sure you heard what Henry had to say about the retail economy at the moment, some of the things that are going on in investment generally all over the world, including in artificial meat IPOs in Silicon Valley. But yours is sometimes at the leading edge of this, because cryptocurrencies are something that everybody talks about but very few people know about. And a lot of people have burnt their fingers here. A lot of people are still unsure. The product that you guys are offering is quite an interesting new way of taking on cryptocurrencies. Nice to speak to you this morning.
Good morning, Gareth. Yeah. Morning. Thanks very much for having me. And, look, the entire economy is interconnected, right?
Yeah.
So you're talking about meat IPOs or crypto. They're all related. They all work together in many ways. So, yeah, I mean, essentially, I mean, today I want to talk to you about payment cryptocurrencies.
Okay,
so this is one of the bundles that we own.
All right, so let's just start off with how people might understand these things, because we've been talking for the longest time about how you should be able to buy things with Bitcoin or any other kind of cryptocurrency if you need to, and you should be able to just use it as a standard exchange as you would rands, dollars, pounds, or whatever else. To what degree is that happening, and what kind of appetite is there for it? And what is a payment cryptocurrency?
Okay, so let me just start with what is a payment cryptocurrency. So, I mean, everyone, well, most people know about Bitcoin, right? And this was essentially the first cryptocurrency, and the idea was to create this fast, cheap, and borderless means of payment. So you could transfer value from somebody in South Africa to somebody in, say, Uzbekistan, in no time whatsoever and for very low cost.
Good.
Because currently, I mean, we can all know the pain points that exist with, you know, moving money overseas.
I've tried to buy things in Uzbekistan for so long now, and it's just never ever worked out for me.
Yeah, well, you know, when you're making payments anyway, right? I mean, even moving money just to Lesotho or Zimbabwe.
Sure.
I mean, it takes a long time and it costs you a lot of money, which it's weird because we live in this digital world. Money is no longer this physical in your wallet kind of thing, but it's quicker to jump onto a plane, fly to New York or fly to Uzbekistan and deliver the money yourself rather than make a digital payment. It's just strange.
Yeah.
So essentially, payment cryptocurrencies are kind of created were created and are being created to kind of address the shortcomings of the traditional payment system. And, you know, Bitcoin kind of kicked this all off. So Bitcoin came out the gate. It was meant to be this borderless, you know, peer-to-peer kind of means of value transfer. And it's done a fantastic job at kind of pioneering the way. Mm-hmm. But over time, there's been all these other cryptos that have emerged, which have essentially, I think, outperformed Bitcoin in many other regards. So Bitcoin's grown in value. It became very well known. But in terms of making very quick transfers, it's terrible. And in terms of making quite, you know, value enhancer transfers, having quite cheap transfers, it's, again, terrible. Just this morning, I went on to one of the wallets that I have to make a 1,000 rand payment to another wallet, and it was going to cost me 55 rand for a 1,000 rand payment, which is you know, even higher than the banks.
So, yeah, that's bad. So which cryptocurrencies or which platforms and which means do you advocate for then if Bitcoin's terrible?
Well, I mean, yeah, so this is the thing, right? There's a lot happening on the Bitcoin front. So you've got the Lightning Network, which is coming in. I won't get into detail on that, but that's meant to change the way that value can be transferred on the Bitcoin network. So Bitcoin is definitely not dead, and it's certainly not dead and gone. But there are these other cryptocurrencies which are just far more superior for value transfer. And this includes Ripple, it includes Litecoin, it includes Lumens on the Stellar network. It includes, of course, Dash, which has a bit more of a privacy focus to it, if you'd like. Mm-hmm. So there's all these other cryptos that can be transferred in a way, way shorter period of time. They're all cheaper to transfer than Bitcoin, and they're all borderless. I can make a payment using Litecoin. I can make a payment using XRP, which is Ripple. I can make a payment using Dash, and it'll happen within 3-5 seconds, and it'll cost me a few cents, no matter the amount that I'm transacting.
You mentioned Litecoin. Now, what's been going on with Litecoin? Because they call it the silver of the crypto world. Why do they call it that, and what's been happening there?
Yeah, so, I mean, Litecoin was actually a hard fork of Bitcoin in 2011. And the founder, Charlie Lee, he kind of created this not to necessarily compete with Bitcoin, just the same way that, you know, silver doesn't necessarily compete with gold. Mm-hmm. But his idea was essentially that you could have some sort of a crypto that would be able to be used for daily activities. So his idea was Bitcoin could be used for buying a car or for buying a house, any high value purchase, and Litecoin essentially could be used for buying your coffee or for buying a chewing gum in a store or something along those lines. So that's essentially what led to the creation of Litecoin. And, you know, what's been making it fly and go up 275% in 2019 alone? Well, this is probably due to the halving that's taking place. So Bitcoin has a mining reward, right? Litecoin has exactly the same thing, this mining reward, which every 10 minutes or so, miners are incentivized to kind of secure the network, and they get rewarded in, if it's the Bitcoin network, in Bitcoin, and in the Litecoin network, they get rewarded in Litecoin. Mm-hmm. And every 10 minutes, essentially a new block is formed. These miners are then rewarded in each of these cryptocurrencies. And what's happening in 4 months' time is essentially the Litecoin network is going to be having a block halving event. And what this means is essentially the inflation rate, or the reward that these miners receive for creating a new block in the Litecoin network, is halved from currently on the Litecoin network. I'll just make sure I'm saying this right. It's going to go from 25 Litecoin to 12.5 Litecoin.
Right. By the way, how many screens do you have around you at the moment?
4 screens.
I'm picturing you sitting there in front of what looks like a control room of a nuclear reactor, watching things going up and down, left and right. By the way, Revix, just to be clear, you guys do offer a payment bundle. Explain to me how that works.
Yeah, so our philosophy is essentially to say, well, you can't pick which cryptocurrencies are going to be the winners in the space. You can't pick which, you know, payment cryptocurrency is going to be the best in the space. Is it going to be Bitcoin? Is Bitcoin's Lightning Network that I mentioned going to actually come through and make Bitcoin a means of payment, something that you can actually use for daily transfers? Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's going to be Ripple. Maybe it's going to be Litecoin. Maybe it's going to be Dash. So what we've done is we've essentially equally weighted the top 5 cryptocurrencies that are payment focused. We've neatly put them in a bundle. We rebalance that bundle on a monthly basis. And essentially, it's an easy-peasy investment. It's a nice way to gain exposure to the payment space in the crypto economy. And, yeah, it's our top-performing bundle of 2019. It's up more than 115%.
Very nice. I also saw that we briefly hit $9,000 again the other day on Bitcoin, right?
Yeah. This year's been a fantastic, fantastic year for crypto.
Who's really behaving well at the moment? I mean, which cryptocurrencies have just seen, besides Litecoin, which you already mentioned, which ones have seen terrific ups?
You've seen quite a few of the smaller cryptos come up, right? You've seen a lot of the altcoins, which, you know, let's call it from the top 10 to top 20 cryptocurrencies. They've increased over, say, the last 2 weeks a lot more than Bitcoin itself. But if you start looking at Ethereum for the last 6 to 12 months has been underperforming Bitcoin quite significantly. Mm-hmm. That's increased substantially. So if you look at Ethereum over a 7-day or maybe a 30-day moving average period, Ethereum's up more than 15 to 20% against Bitcoin itself. Dash is up. Monero's up. Monero's a privacy-focused cryptocurrency, kind of co-built, if you want to call it that, by a fellow South African. So No, there's a lot happening in the space. There's a lot of cryptos that are kind of weaving and wobbing. Binance's, which is the world's largest exchange, is their token called BNB, which has just gone into our top 10 cryptos. That's doing exceptionally well. That's more. That's probably the top performing crypto over the last week, month, and year.
Wow. Why are there so many different Bitcoin versions?
Well, it's kind of coming to this idea of having a faster, cheaper, and more borderless means of payment, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Bitcoin has a better store of value. And you know, a lot of people will go, well, how does Bitcoin have a better store of value? But essentially, you've got a bigger market. You've got more miners. It's a lot harder to corrupt this network.
Right.
And the value that goes with that, or the problem, I suppose, that goes with that is that transactions now become, you know, quite a lot more expensive. So in terms of making very cheap payments, Bitcoin at the moment is just not very good. So you've had other cryptos step in, such as Litecoin, such as Dash, or such as Monero or Ripple, that have stepped in to kind of fill these gaps and maybe even to target niches. So as an example, if you look at Ripple, Ripple is more targeting institutional investors like your banks. And essentially, these banks would be able to take on Ripple, and Ripple's currency essentially is called XRP. Mm-hmm. They would be able to keep that on their books, and essentially, if they were moving money from one country to another, no longer do they need to store a huge amount of all these different fiat currencies. They don't need to store dollars and pounds and, you know, all these other currencies on their books. They essentially can use XRP to move from one currency to another. And this is instant, it's very low cost, and it's essentially more efficient than what's currently out there. So again, they're just targeting all these different niches. There's Stellar Lumens, as an example, which is more peer-to-peer. So as an example, you've got Venmo in the States with 40 million users, and that's, you know, opened the gates for this peer-to-peer economy. And Stellar Lumens is essentially going for exactly the same thing, where if you want to pay your friend for dinner or something like that, or pay or split the bill, you could use Lumens to essentially just make a transfer. It's instant, it's free, it's fantastic.
All right. Very, very good. I'm afraid that's all we got time for this morning, but thank you, Sean. Always good to catch up. And you can find out more by listening to the entire series over the next couple of weeks. We're going to be talking to Sean Saunders and other people about Revix and about all the other cryptocurrencies and things like the payment bundle that we discussed today. Thanks so much for talking to us this morning. There's Sean. Okay. You ready to get your day going?
Yeah, about there.
Tried to start that already. Promise you, we're trying very hard here. We're trying to keep everybody happy. All right, so lots of news stories, lots of things we want to talk about. In a short while, we'll also speak to a guy who's come up with a brilliant new idea. It's called Beat the Price, and the reason I want to talk to him is because there are lots of these sites in America that help you to compare prices across different, you know, sellers, buyers, and to figure out which one's the best, and the computer does the work for you, because you could spend your whole morning just comparing prices. Oh, I know people who will drive from shop to shop to look at the price of something, and I think you're spending more on petrol than you are on what the eventual article would cost you.
Yeah.
So we'll speak to a guy called Marius de Toy in a short while and talk to him about all of that. If you want to get hold of us, 0797482090, that's the number to call us on. And if you've got something you'd like to say, you can always send us a voice mail, you know, a voice note. We can play them straight off of here, and you can tell us what's on your mind. Plus, you can message the screen directly in text. So just put that into your WhatsApp. That's 0797482090, and you can get hold of us any way you like. Any way you want it. What's that song again?
I know which one it is, but...
Any way you want it, that's the way you need it. Any way you want it. It's Journey, right?
That one.
I've got to find it now. It is, right? Any way you want it. Yes! Got it. Okay, so it is. Now you're going to have to listen to it because it just popped into my head. All right, here's some Journey for you. At least I'm not playing Don't Stop Believing.
Oh.
That you got to be sick of, right? Okay, here's a real song from Journey. Take it away, bitches. Monday morning, get your day going properly. And hit it. Oh, the band are taking forever. I hate it when they do this.
Still in the change room.
Yeah, I know. Come on, guys. I set up this mic and everything. Get your instruments and start. Damn it.
Curtains are opening.
Yeah, there they are. Okay, there they are. All right, good. And they're all ready to go. Oh, these guys from the 80s are so lame.
So slow.
Come on, let's go.
This is CliffCentral.com.